Miles, he's already in the coffee shop. I should get in there.
This is going to be a touchy situation. I want you to handle it exactly as I told you.
I know, Miles. You're the brains, I'm just your mouth. Okay, I'm going in there.
Devin, if you succeed, it means big money for both of us.
Big money. Got it. Thanks.
You must be Devin Williams.
Yes, sir. It's nice to meet you face to face, Mr. Beaumont.
Call me Raymond. Take a seat, son.
So let's get down to it. How can I help you?
Devin, when you first contacted Arachnid Sportswear about sponsoring the Explorer Society, I told you our motto.
Arachnid Sportswear, action equipment for winners.
And yet, what did millions of viewers watch on the Nature Adventure Channel last week? The Explorer Society wearing Arachnid Sportswear as they lost to that creation team. Devin, I'm pulling my sponsorship.
Raymond, we will so completely sabotage the creation response team that they will suffer a completely embarrassing defeat.
That sounds promising. Then it's a deal.
What are Devin and Miles up to? How do they plan to sabotage the creation response team? To find out, join the adventure in Jonathan Park and the Arctic Adventure. Just a couple days later, the Explorers Society and the Creation Response Team stand before a live audience in a TV studio in Orlando, Florida.
Welcome back from break and to the most exciting TV show on the Nature Adventure Channel, Battle of the World Views. And now, again, here's our host, Willie Hutton.
Thank you, Bob. Well, it's time once again to send our two teams out to an exciting new location. The Creation Response Team executed a victorious strategy on our last episode at Mount St. Helens, but now it's the Explorer Society's turn. Team leader Dr. Shannon Hunt, where are we going?
We're going in search of Tiktaalik.
You've got to be kidding.
Who's Tiktaalik?
In April of 2006, a team of scientists announced their discovery of Tiktaalik.
Many are considering this creature to be one of the best examples of an evolutionary missing link.
And in my opinion, this is a serious blow to those who do not accept the fact of evolution.
Now, where is the search for these fossils going to lead us?
Willie, that's almost as amazing as the fossil. We're going to Ellesmere Island.
Uh-oh.
Sounds like Angela knows where that is. But for the rest of us, Jack, can you tell us?
Willie, the site's not too far below the North Pole. This time of year should be nice, but the wilderness definitely has its challenges.
Well, first of all, can you explain the evolution from fish to land?
Yes, we believe that we began to see the journey from water to sea about 380 million years ago as some fish began evolving tetrapod-like attributes.
Hold on there, Mariah. Explain what a tetrapod is for our audience.
A tetrapod is an animal with a backbone, or spinal column, and four limbs. Anyway, it's thought that fish continued to evolve upward, eventually becoming suited for life on land.
And how does this Tiktaalik fossil fit?
Well, it's rather exciting, Willie. I mean, up till now, we haven't found the fossils to completely document the transition from fish to land-dwelling animals. There's been a bit of a gap. Well, Tiktaalik is helping to close that gap. It appears to be a fish with some very strong tetrapod characteristics.
Creation Response Team, what do you think about all this?
I guess we'll get down to what these fossils really mean and try to point out the assumptions being made by the evolutionists. I should also point out that creation would also predict that we find fossils buried in water-deposited sediment as a result of the worldwide flood. And this is what we see with the discovery of Tiktaalik.
Thanks, Kendall. Ladies, this is a harsh environment. Are you coming with your babies?
Well, Willie, we're a family and a team, and we love to go on these adventures together. I guess we'll have to discuss it, but I would assume we're going to give it a try.
And now, just a reminder of the rules. Both teams will be sent out to the site and given 3 days to collect evidence to support their case. While in the field, our producer, Dwayne Gibbons, will follow them around with a camera, documenting every struggle, every adventure, and every victory that they'll encounter along their way. Each team also has their own camera. Upon your return, our live studio audience will vote for the team that they think best established proof for their worldview. Bob, remind us again of that prize.
The loser of each week's competition will take home $50,000. The winner, $100,000. The overall winner on all 5 weeks will walk away with another $500,000.
That's a grand total of $1.25 million. Okay, after this commercial break, we'll send our two teams off to Ellesmere Island in the Canadian Arctic.
Okay, Creation Response Team, the Hilo pilot told me this is the last of your things. Welcome to Ellesmere Island.
Thanks, Dwayne.
Hey, Jonathan, can you carry these over to the tents?
Oh, no problem, Mr. Brennan.
Wait, I'd like to give you a rundown on how we're set up.
That'd be helpful, thanks.
Okay, the Explorer Society is set up right over there. The actual fossil site is just about half a mile that way.
Oh, Kendall's already down there. And so's the Explorer Society.
Yes, they wanted to jump right on it. Okay, yesterday the crew from Battle of the World Views worked hard to set up for you. Right over there is a supply of water. All your tents are set up, and they even drove down a quad from Grice Fjord for each of the two teams.
What's a quad, Dad?
Well, Ryan, it's like a four-wheeled motorcycle.
Finally, I know most of your equipment uses satellite communications, and that's going to be a problem. For example, here at camp, we are unable to communicate with the outside world. But just a couple of miles away is a high ridge. Yesterday, before the setup crew left, they found a sweet spot right over there where we can get a radio signal.
And remember how our communicator watches work. If we're close enough to each other, they use a direct link, so we probably won't have a problem talking to each other. But when we get out of range, they automatically switch over to a satellite signal, which probably won't be very dependable up here.
Jonathan, shall we get those duffel bags over to the tents?
Sure thing, Mr. Brennan. We'll see you guys over at the tents.
All right,
thank you.
Bye.
See you later.
Dwayne, it's much warmer here than I thought it was going to be.
Yeah, I was talking to one of the locals when we were at Grice Fjord. He said this was one of the warmest days yet this summer.
Well, it must be in the high 50s.
Well, that's not so warm, Mom.
Mom, I just think it's so weird how the sun never sets.
But then in winter, it stays dark 24 hours a day.
Wow. This place is a little unusual. I mean, here's patches of snow, and then giant stretches of hilly desert, and no trees.
But it's gorgeous in its own way, isn't it, Ryan?
Mm-hmm.
Look at those wildflowers right over there.
How far are we from Grice Fjord?
I think we're a little more than 100 miles west of Grice Fjord.
Mr. Gibbons, Grice Fjord isn't the only town on this island, is it?
Yes and no. Further north in the middle of the island is a military base at Eureka. There's a small rotating staff that lives there. Then at the very top of the island is the settlement of Alert. It's the most northerly town in the world. Just a handful of people live there on a permanent basis. It is only 507 miles from the North Pole.
Well, we'd better get these babies snuggled into camp and ready for sleep.
And then I think I'll head out to the fossil site with my camera and see what kind of footage I can pick up.
So this is the famous discovery site for Tiktaalik, the walking fish?
Wow.
Kind of a humble-looking place for such an important fossil, isn't it?
Yes, I mean, just along this stretch of sediment is where they found the original.
Great. Hello, guys!
Jonathan, you're here. Hey, how's everything back at camp?
Oh, good. I think everyone's all settled in.
Dwayne, I know you're gonna roll video while we're here at the site. I guess I just need to know what you want from us.
Glenn, I would love it if you guys could find a fossil here. It would be great video. If you do, let's just clean it up as best you can to get some good video before you seal it up in plaster jacket to get it back home.
Sounds good.
All right, so where do we start?
I was thinking that we need to explain the basics for our viewers.
I agree. Do you want me to do a piece on how we classify fish?
That would be great. Jonathan, you always do a great job interviewing. Do you want to ask her questions?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, Jonathan, I want to start with the fish group as a whole and keep working my way down the groupings until we get to Tiktaalik.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, I'm rolling. Jonathan?
Miss Meadows, can you tell us how they classify fish?
Well, Jonathan, fish are usually divided into two main categories. Jawless fish, like the lampreys and hagfish, and jawed fish, which is every other type of fish.
So if there's such a large group of jawed fish, can we break them down into subcategories?
Yes, into two more. First is the cartilaginous fish, which have a soft skeleton made from cartilage. This would include rays and sharks. The other group is the bony fish, which have hard, bony skeletons, and this is by far the largest group.
And so I'll bet that group can be broken down even smaller.
Yes. Again, two groups. First would be the ray-finned fish, and then there's the less common lobe-finned fish that we're interested in.
What's the difference between the two?
Well, the ray-finned fish are the ones that we most commonly think of. Their fins are made from rays of bones. They fan out. However, lobe-finned fish have the same thing, but on the end of little stumpy stalks of flesh supported by segments of bone.
And that's the group that Tiktaalik comes from.
Exactly, Jonathan. Tiktaalik rosae comes from the groupings of the lobe fin fish.
And it's those fins that are a big part of the controversy.
You've got that right.
Jonathan, it's important to remember why classification is so important to an evolutionist like Mariah. By grouping fish into categories like this, they're trying to understand how one type of fish evolved from another. They believe that similar traits are evidence of a common ancestor. Am I representing you accurately?
Yes, I believe so. It'd make sense that common traits should give us clues about the close evolutionary relationship of these fish.
But Jonathan, there's a problem. As it turns out, many fish have the traits of one group and other traits that are also similar to another group. So while these groupings can help us better understand the different varieties of animals, to try and group them based on evolutionary history can turn into a nightmare. They just don't fit into a smooth transition from one type of fish to another.
How do we look at these classifications?
In Genesis 1, 20 and 21, it says, "And God said, let the waters bring forth abundantly the moving creature that hath life, and fowl that may fly above the earth in the open firmament of heaven. And God created great whales and every living creature that moveth, which the waters brought forth abundantly after their kind, and every winged fowl after his kind. And God saw that it was good." So, Jonathan, when we see these different groups of fish, we realize that God created distinct kinds of fish that have expressed all kinds of wonderful variety.
So, when we see common traits, it doesn't point to a common ancestor. Instead, it points to the fact that they have the same creator.
Yes, God equipped them differently with the different designs that they needed to live as he designed them to do.
Well, Kendall, you managed to even squeeze the creation message into a talk about fish classification.
It's my job.
Okay, guys, if there's any chance we're going to find a Tiktaalik fossil, we'd better get busy.
Hello?
Miles, it's me, Devin.
Devin, my friend. How are you on the top of the world? Are you still in Grice Fjord?
Yes. I'll bet that this is the only place on Hellsmere Island that's got a phone.
So, did you do what I asked you to do?
Not yet. I just feel ridiculous.
Look, I want you to charter a helo and get up there and rub that meat all over their tent and around their campsite.
All right, I think I have a pilot who's ready to fly me out there right now, so I better go.
Angela, are you still awake?
Oh, yes. Joseph Caleb isn't sleeping.
Well, it's probably because the sun's still up. Look over there at Katie and Jonathan. They're sure out.
They were really tired. It was a long day getting here and setting up camp.
Yeah. What's wrong, honey? You're worried about Joseph, aren't you?
I guess it's a little intimidating being so far out in the Arctic wilderness.
What's wrong?
Kendall, listen.
What in the world was that? You're right, honey. There's something out there. Where's the...
Dad! Dad! What's going on?
Katie, get over here with your mother and me.
Jonathan, wake up! Son, scoot over here!
But those are wolves!
He's coming to the tent! Grab the baby!
Look, there's one right there! It heads through!
Now let's both shoot up in the air!
Yes, sir! Hey, on! Get out!
He was watching over us.
Amen.
What a nightmare.
I agree. That was so scary. I thought we were going to lose little Joseph Caleb.
Me too. Guys, I hate to say it, but I don't think this is good for our babies up here in this wilderness like this.
Yes, I feel the same way.
Me too. Jim, I think we ought to try to get our wives and babies back to civilization.
I agree. Let's get them back to Grice Fjord. We can all head back in the morning after we get a little sleep.
No, Kendall, you can't. You have to be here to challenge what the Explorer Society is going to be saying about that fish fossil.
I guess you're right. Well, how are the rest of you feeling? Do you want to stay?
We're fine. I'm up to it.
Let's do this.
Good morning, Moms.
Hey, hello.
So, I heard about your little adventure last night.
Yes.
I guess Jim and Kendall discovered that there were some stakes purposely buried under our tents to attract wild animals.
You're kidding!
It does make you wonder, though, who else is out here with us?
Will and I, for one, am not going to stick around to find out.
That's right. I hear you two are calling it quits.
We're not quitting. We just think that this might have been a little too much for our little ones.
That's got to be your first priority. Everything takes a backseat when they're that age.
You make it sound like they're a distraction.
No, they're not a distraction. It's just that when you have children, it can become your whole life.
But Shannon, what better joy could there be than pouring your life into your children? Well, there's a verse in the Bible that says, "For what shall it profit a man if he shall gain the whole world and lose his own soul?" Mark 8:36. Well, Shannon, what if I gained the whole world, but I lost my child's soul?
I understand. But I just don't think a woman has to give up her entire life when she has kids. I mean, look at you two. All the rest of us are uncovering scientific discoveries, learning the great mysteries of the world, and all the while you two are changing diapers.
Ouch.
Sorry, that was uncalled for.
Have we done something to offend you?
No, actually, it's my fault. I can't explain it. For some reason, I just find myself frustrated when I'm around you. I guess I can't stand that cutesy-wootsy mom thing. But it's not right for me to let my frustrations out on you. I'll try better to bite my tongue when I'm feeling it coming on.
Okay. If you ever need to talk about it, let us know.
Right.
For now, we need to say goodbye to the others before we go.
All right. Have a good Hilo ride. By the way, when you see Kendall, let him know we want to start filming down at the fossil site.
Oh, we will.
Okay, guys, let's get some video recorded here. I feel like we've all been a little distracted.
Yeah, I'm sorry, Dwayne, but now that the wives and the babies are headed to safety, I think we're going to be able to focus on the task at hand.
Hello, Dad? Dad, are you there?
I'm sorry, Dwayne, let me get this. Katie, what's up?
Dad, Ryan and I want to join you down there at the site. Can we take the quad?
Is it all right, Dwayne?
Sure, it's only half a mile. Does Katie know how to drive one?
Oh, yeah, she's driven before in New Mexico. Okay, Katie, just take it easy with Ryan on there with you, all right?
Yes, sir. See you in a little while.
Okay, if you're ready to record now, let's do it.
Roll.
You got it.
Now, Jonathan, remember how we were talking about how some fish have the same kind of characteristics from different groups of fish?
Yes, sir.
Well, I think it's important to understand the concept of a mosaic creature.
A mosaic creature?
Yes. This is an animal that has the characteristics from several different animals.
Oh, like a platypus.
Exactly.
It's a mammal that lays eggs like a reptile. It has a bill and webbed feet like a duck, a tail like a beaver, and spurs on its hind feet like a spiny anteater. Except it gives off venom. That's one crazy animal.
Yeah, sure is. I mean, where did it evolve from, and how you classify it? Instead, I believe the Creator made the platypus with all these traits that are similar to completely unrelated animals. And we see other examples like this throughout the animal kingdom.
But how does that apply to the world of fish?
Well, Jonathan, evolutionists are excited about Tiktaalik because they think it shares some characteristics that are similar to tetrapods. So, evolutionists believe this fish was in the middle of evolving to be a tetrapod. But what if it was just a mosaic creature? What if it was a fish that simply shared characteristics that were somewhat similar to that of tetrapods?
So, Dad, they believe that Tiktaalik was an ancestor to a creature that crawled out of the water and began to breathe air and able to support itself enough to walk on land, right? But there's other fish that we know of that do that type of thing, isn't there?
Well, you know, that's the ironic thing, Jonathan. The snakehead fish can wiggle along the shore and can spend hours out of the water. So can the walking catfish and mudskippers and the climbing perch. And I guess this proves our point. All of these fish can do what you'd expect of the ancestor of a land-dwelling animal to do. And yet, none of these are considered by evolutionists to be in the direct line of the first creature that crawled out of the water. They're too different from tetrapods in other ways. Jonathan, this just shows what a hard task evolutionists have, trying to line all the animals up into an evolutionary progression from fish to land dweller. It's because the fossils and animals we find just don't line up. They have too many mosaic characteristics. And again, it seems like strong evidence that one animal did not evolve into another, but that the Creator made each kind of animal with the characteristics it needs to survive in its specific environment.
Guys! Guys!
Tiktaalik?
Yes!
All right!
Great footage. Come on, let's go!
Hang on, Ryan! Hey, where'd you learn to do this?
Well, I've gone a couple of times with my friend Danielle's family. They like to head out to the high desert back home.
Katie, look!
What in the world is that?
Oh, it's a musk ox. Look out, you're going right for it.
Hold on, Ryan.
Katie, watch out. It's too steep on the slope. It's starting to slide.
It's got no slope.
Lean this way.
I can't believe it. Dr. West, you found a Tiktaalik fossil.
No kidding. This is a discovery of a lifetime for a paleontologist.
Congratulations, Glenn.
Yes, Glenn, this is excellent.
Thanks, Kendall and Priest. Dwayne, are you getting this on video?
Yes, sir.
And look here, Jonathan.
Another one?
I think we have two here.
All right. Well, I've got the camera rolling. Tell me about this fossil.
It's estimated that this particular creature lived 383 million years ago.
So how long did it supposedly take for a fish to evolve into a land-dwelling creature?
Jonathan, based on the fossil evidence, we believe that the transition began about 385 million years ago and was complete by about 365 million years ago.
So it took 20 million years?
Yes, Jonathan, that's our current thinking.
As you know, I do not believe that evolution is even possible or has ever been observed. But let's just say it could happen. You're telling me that a fish could turn into a tetrapod in a mere 20 million years of evolutionary time?
Is that a problem?
To quote Dr. Clack, who has studied these fossils, there remains a large morphological gap between them and digits as seen in, for example, Acanthostega. If these digits evolved from these distal bones, the process must have evolved considerable developmental repatterning.
Dad, what does that mean?
Well, Dr. Clack is an evolutionist and totally convinced of the evolution from fish to land. But she brings up a great point. She says that there's still a large gap between the bones of Tiktaalik and the fingers of its closest tetrapod, Acanthostega. She says that it would take some considerable change.
So what's your point, Kendall?
I'm absolutely convinced that infinite time would never allow this to happen. But I guess I'm kind of surprised that you accept that this could happen so quickly in your time frame.
Can it happen so quickly? The answer, according to the fossil record, is that it did.
Respectfully, that's based on your assumption that these animals fit into an evolutionary progression. But there is another point to bring up. Isn't it interesting that this transition from fish to tetrapod happened in a mere 20 million years in evolutionary history, and yet since that time, they have essentially stopped evolving?
I guess it's because one group of early tetrapods went on to be in the lineage of man, and the others stayed basically the same.
You know, Glenn, that just doesn't wash with me. I think it's a much more scientific explanation to say that none of them evolved. Instead, they were designed by the Creator.
I guess that's a matter of opinion.
And cut. That was great, guys.
Is it just me, or is it getting colder out here? Whew.
Yes, the temperature's definitely dropping.
Dad! Dad!
What's wrong, Katie?
Ryan and I crashed the quad.
What? Oh, are you okay?
No. I think Ryan's hurt pretty bad. We need help.
Ryan. Ryan, how are you doing?
Katie, I'm really hurting bad.
Well, here they come.
Found you.
Ryan, are you okay?
Ryan, look at me. What hurts?
We tumbled over. I think it's his arm.
Guys, what's going on? Does Ryan need help?
Yeah, it looks like his arm's banged up pretty bad.
Ryan, I'm trained in first aid. Can I look at your arm?
Ow!
What do you think?
I think it's broken.
Ryan?
We need to get him to town.
Jonathan's right.
We also need to get him out of the cold. The temperature's really starting to drop.
The medical center in Grice Fjord. We'll need to get him there.
Katie, I'm going to send you in the helicopter with Ryan. I want you to make sure the pilot gets him to the medical center. And then you contact his mom and dad right away.
Yes, sir.
Okay, let's go.
Oh, Katie, my arm's really throbbing.
Ryan, be strong. It's going to be okay. Pilot, sir, how much further now do we have to go?
We got about 45 minutes.
Come on, Ryan, 45 minutes. You can hang on that long.
Oh, boy.
What was that?
Oh, I don't believe it. The blades are freezing up.
What? What's that mean?
Great, we've got enough ice building up on those things that it's changing the blade's airfoil shape and increasing drag.
Sir, what does that mean?
It means we're going down.
That's what I was afraid of.
We're going to be stranded out in the Arctic wilderness!
Are Katie and Ryan all right? Will they be stranded in the middle of the Canadian Arctic? To find out, you'll have to join us next time for part two of Jonathan Park and the Arctic Adventure. You've been listening to The Adventures of Jonathan Park. Although the story is fictitious, many of our adventures are based on real places, historical events, or scientific discoveries. To learn more about Jonathan Park and evidence for creation, please visit our website at jonathanpark.com. You'll also find additional resources that will help you see and understand how science is in complete agreement with God's Word. That's jonathanpark.com. Make sure to join us next time as Ryan and Katie fight for survival alone in the wilderness of Ellesmere Island in part two of Jonathan Park and the Arctic Adventure.
Until next time, this is Dr. Kendall Park reminding you, this is our Father's world. God created it. We can explore it. So live the adventure.